and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Tonight in the show, we'll be discussing two main issues. The first is the bill to abolish the mandatory death penalty, which has been tabled for its first reading in Dewan Rakyat recently, and the amendments to abolish natural life imprisonment and to replace life imprisonment with a capped duration. So we're going to be discussing this and many more with our two guests today. Ramkarpal Singh, Deputy Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of Law and Institutional Reform, as well as Abdul Rashid Ismail. He's the past president of the National Human Rights Society of Malaysia, HAKAM. He's also been a death penalty advocate since 2010 and has dedicated a substantial part of his legal practice to pro bono human rights work. He defends those who society has forgotten. In 2019, Rashid submitted an extensive report to the Special Committee on Alternative Sentencing that was set up to look at proposed reforms on death penalty laws in Malaysia. We welcome both to the show. Ram, I might start with you. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Can you begin by helping us understand what these legal amendments mean? What does it mean to abolish mandatory death penalty and the amendments to do away with natural life imprisonment?
Well, basically, what we are proposing, in fact, is the abolition of the mandatory death penalty, not the death penalty itself. Mm-hmm. I think there's been some confusion in that respect. Some people think it's a total abolition. It's not, but because in Malaysia we have, broadly speaking, 11 offences which carry the mandatory death penalty. So out of that, nine out of those 11 offences will retain the death penalty, although in the courts will be given a discretion now as to whether or not to impose that sentence, or in the alternative, impose a sentence of 30 to 40 years. Imprisonment,
okay,
with a minimum of 12 strokes of whipping. So that's basically what the amendment is.
So help me understand why 9 out of the 11 will retain the death penalty.
Well, I think because, like, for example, murder is under section 302 of the Penal Code, and the broad policy is where an offence causes death. Mm. Obviously, in the case of murder, then the death sentence is retained, albeit in a discretionary form.
Okay.
Yes.
And while we're on you very quickly, I'd like to understand better the government's thinking about natural life imprisonment.
Mm-hmm. You mean what the policy behind it?
Yeah. What was the policy behind doing away with natural life imprisonment?
There are two types of imprisonment sentences in the country now. One is life, which is not natural life.
Okay.
That's defined as 30 years. That remains.
Life is defined as 30 years.
Yes. And that remains. Mm-hmm. There's no changes with in respect of that. And then there is also natural life, imprisonment for natural life, atau sepanjang hayat is in Bahasa Malaysia, and that extends to the person dies in prison.
Okay.
So as far as the government, the policy is concerned, there are various reasons why we've decided to do away with natural life. One being obviously one of the main purposes of sentencing is to rehabilitate. Obviously, if you're going to keep somebody in prison till the day he dies, the question of his rehabilitation, coming back into society, and so on, does not really arise. So we have kept it now to 30 years, which may extend to 40, depending on the judge's discretion,
okay,
depending on the facts and circumstances of a given case.
Okay. All right. So, Rashid, I might bring you into the conversation.
Yes.
You've been working in this area for a very long time. Mm. Why is it important to abolish the death penalty, mandatory death penalty?
Thank you, Melissa, for having me here today. First, we need to understand what is mandatory death sentence. Essentially, it is a sentence to be meted out by the court upon conviction without taking into account mitigating circumstances. So it is important because now we are giving this power to the court to the judiciary decide whether somebody deserves life or death, because that is the role of the judges in determining the measure of punishment. So when you have a mandatory death sentence, what happens is this. It is oppressive because you do not take into account that person may have mental health issues, that person may have circumstances that should not allow him or her to be sentenced to death. We take, for example, in the case of the Sabah lady with the 9 children, right? And she is a single mother. Surely, within the context, if she was allowed to submit her mitigating circumstances, a death sentence would not have been given to her.
Okay, so then what happens to all those people who are currently on death row now? Will they, if this bill is passed, if the amendments are passed, what happens to them?
Ramesh? These amendments, if they are passed, they will apply retrospectively. Now, what that means is it will apply to those whose offences have been committed even before the coming into effect of the amendments of the new law. So the law, although passed now, will apply to an offence committed 5 years ago,
right?
For example.
And how many people might this impact?
There's about, I think it's about 400 odd cases where they have been sentenced, and they can go back to, one of the amendments is to allow them to go back to the federal court for the purpose of or filing an application in the federal court for the purpose of reviewing that death sentence imposed on them.
Does this make it more complicated, the fact that this law, if passed, will be applied retrospectively? Is that something that would complicate the process, or is that part of the providing the due course of justice?
Well, I think it should apply across the board. The amendments should apply to all those who are facing death penalty cases and those who have been sentenced to death as well. I don't think there's any justification for depriving those the category of cases before the coming into effect of the law. Mm. So it's got to be proportionate and ought to apply to all.
Rashid?
Thank you, Melissa. Two parts to this resentencing. Those who are on death row, those who have exhausted their appeal process, there are about 893 individuals, right? And the second part is those who are still in the system. In the system, 425, meaning to say that they're still at High Court, Court of Appeal, or Federal Court. Okay. So they're pending. So as far as this is concerned, I suspect that the system will take care of itself. So for those individuals, 893 individuals who are still, who have exhausted their appeal process, then this is where the resentencing comes in. So in this process, what will happen is this. They would have to file an application based on the bill that the government has produced. They have to file the application, and they would have to submit their mitigating circumstances to justify why their sentence should not be given to them.
Can I ask you, does every case have mitigating circumstances?
So difficult is this. If you, in the death mandatory death sentence regime, the court or the judge is not allowed to take into account the mitigating circumstances of the individual. So there is an unfairness there. So that is why the government has correctly decided to remove mandatory death sentence in the system. So I think the government should be applauded for what they have done.
Okay, all right. So I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. So we're talking about the bill like it will pass and be gazetted. Can we come back to a step back and think about the obstacles to getting this bill passed? In the time since this government has announced that it wants to table a bill to abolish mandatory death penalty, I think it was December when it was made announced. So it was June of the last government, June that was announced, but in December this government announced it. How has the reception been? Has there been pushback from any quarters?
Well, of course, you know, in our rounds of engagement, we have met with quite a number of stakeholders, those who have an interest. Of course, we have also met with the families of victims. Mm. And I think it's very important for us to have met them. In fact, there was a task force that was set up for the purpose of studying the abolition of the mandatory death penalty in the past, they also met with various victims' families. And you can understand and sympathize with their point of view that, of course, quite a number of them, in fact, all of them, I think, are against the removal of the mandatory death penalty. But at the same time, I think there are also many parties who are for it in terms of, particularly because they feel that it's not serving its purpose, the death penalty. You know, it was once thought to be a deterrent, and unfortunately, statistics tend to suggest otherwise.
So what's the point of the death penalty in the first place? To serve as a deterrent?
As a deterrent, mainly, yes.
Okay.
And so over the years, you know, you can see whether it's effective or not, and it doesn't seem to be as effective as thought.
Mm.
Can I just add on? I think what people must understand, when you abolish mandatory sentence, you are not letting the wrongdoers go free. They are still going to be punished. They're 30 to 40 years based on the bill that they have to sentence, that they have to serve, right? And I think at the end of the day, it is the more human way of treating with those who have been who committed crime. They have different circumstances, and not all crimes are the same. And I think rest assured for the family, the family of the victims.
The justice part comes into the justice for the family members. That's a big counter argument against abolishing mandatory death penalty, right?
Are they asking for justice or retribution? That is the key question that they want to ask ourselves. Are we going to be a more compassionate society, or are we going to be a vindictive society? This is where the trajectory of the society is moving forward. So we need to look at it from that perspective, not so much about justice. Justice, this person who has committed the wrongdoing definitely will go to prison if the court finds him guilty.
Okay, all right.
I'd just like to correct myself.
Sure.
Earlier, I think I gave the wrong figures. It's 840 who can go back to court.
Okay, yeah. Back to the federal level.
To the federal
level.
Court.
Okay, all right. Very quickly, I want to, because you said a bit earlier you talked to stakeholders before tabling for the first reading this bill. What about political response? Again, I'm wondering, again, because previously, I think last year, MCA Youth had set up a wing that was against abolition of the mandatory death penalty. I'm wondering about political pressure, whether you're hearing anything that might make you think this bill will not pass.
Not really. I think it's been quite smooth recently, and we have invited, in fact, I'm scheduled to brief all MPs from both sides of the divide, opposition and government, tomorrow on the latest developments, what this bill is all about, so on and so forth. And we've also invited MPs from both sides to join us in various discussions that we've had in the past. And so from those invitations and discussions that we have had, I don't think there's been there have been concerns, of course, I mean, raised, but I don't think it's to the point where, you know, it won't be passed.
Is the support the same for the abolition of the mandatory death penalty and to do away with natural life imprisonment? Is the support the same for both?
I think, generally speaking, those who are for the abolition of the mandatory death penalty are also they think the same way about natural life as well.
Okay.
Generally speaking,
all right.
From my from what I gather.
There are critics who say that actually this doesn't go far enough. In fact, why abolish mandatory death penalty? Why not take it further and abolish the death penalty itself? How do you respond to those critics?
Well, I think, we've got to look at it, I think, in stages. And I think to introduce a total abolition now, I don't think the country is ready for it. At this stage, and because it is quite drastic, and there's still a lot of room to think about, you know, and especially when it comes to violent offences.
What do you mean by not ready?
Not ready in the sense that we need to see how the this partial abolition of the mandatory death penalty, how it is accepted in time to come. So this is the first step that we have taken. And of course, we are still very much in the process of wanting to find out our main concern really is to look at various angles. One is the rehabilitation of offenders. Two is the number of crimes committed. So in time to come, after this bill has been passed, we will be studying and monitoring very closely the incidents of crimes in the future.
That's very interesting. Rashid, does it frustrate you as someone who has worked in this area, who's long championed to do away with the death penalty? Does it frustrate you that the government is not going far enough?
To be honest, I mean, when the government announced it in 2018, it was a surprise to us, to all of us. Because I think, I totally agree that this is a very good first step, because there are issues to be dealt with, and it is not an easy issue to be discussed, and it raises emotions from different quarters. So I think this is a first step that is very good.
Okay, so you see this as more of a journey.
It is a journey.
First step. Okay.
That's right.
All right. So just to use that metaphor of a journey, what happens now? What is the next step? What needs to happen if this bill, if we do away, we abolish the mandatory death penalty? What other reforms in the criminal justice system need to happen to support and ensure effective sentencing reform? Rashid, you could do it.
So one of the things that I think must happen is that we need to have the social services to provide reports for those who are going to be sentenced, because we need to know their background. Quite apart from family coming forward to give their mitigating circumstances, it's important that the government also provide that service for those facing death sentence.
So like a social officer,
yes,
who reviews.
The reviews, okay, look at their background, their circumstances. Quite apart from the family, they can do one part, but also the government can provide independent assessment. And the second part is also, I think what is not commonly known is that those who are on death row, they're inflicted by mental disorder or mental illness upon execution, and having served many years in the solitary confinement, where they're only allowed to go out 1 hour in a day, 20 hours, 23 hours in their cell, they would have had mental health disorder. And I think it is important that the Ministry of Health also provide services for psychiatric forensic. And it's important, and it's very difficult at this stage in our country to actually engage with psychiatrists outside the government system. Because firstly, I think there's a very limited number of psychiatrists available. And I think moving forward, that is something that the government needs to think about.
Okay.
Having more psychiatrists.
Just add to that, I think in terms of reform, one very important aspect is sentencing. Guidelines when it comes to sentencing by the courts. Eventually, we should have proper or more uniformed guidelines for sentencing, which we are looking at, you know, other jurisdictions, countries, studying their systems to see how they
could. Could you elaborate? What do you mean by guidelines for sentencing? This would be for the judiciary.
Yes, because the courts, when they mete out sentences, they are guided mainly by past precedents, past cases. So sometimes there are inconsistencies, and when it comes to proportionate sentences being handed down to offenders. Mm. So one important part of reform, I think, is to introduce standard guidelines which can be applied across the board.
So is this what other countries are doing? They have
a few countries
have guidelines.
They have guidelines, yes.
Okay. Rashid, do you think that this would be a good move, having guidelines?
Certainly. I think it is important, because the problem is that the problem is judges do not see the trend, because they are not able to, they don't have the data. So if you have a sentencing council, then what will happen is that they can develop that policy for the judge to adopt such policy. But it's not mandatory generally, but it is a guideline that can be used for the court as a guide. How do you sentence a particular crime? So I think it's a very useful move. I think it's one of the things that we should have.
Okay, excellent. So if this bill comes to pass, we are talking about so returning the discretion to judges,
yes,
and for sentencing, and no more natural life imprisonment. You talked about rehabilitation of offenders using this approach. Ram, can you elaborate how this plays into reform of the criminal justice system that you would like to see during your tenure?
Well, I think, when we talk about reform is always reform, rehabilitation. These are all very important aims of sentencing. And so when we, when you sentence an offender, I think you've got to think of his coming back into society at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And, there are various things. And this is where prison reform is also very important. Because one of the issues that we have come across is prison congestion.
Right.
And there is a very high number of prison inmates, more than the limits, generally speaking, in the country. So when we talk about offenders going back out into the community, I think there's also a duty to ensure that they have learnt a lesson, to put it bluntly, meaning that we've given them a chance to reform themselves, to become a better person when they go back out into society.
Do you think that we have embodied this rehabilitative approach in the way Malaysia has its criminal justice system? Is rehabilitation our ethos?
I think if you look at the bill, that was one of the guiding principle that the government has actually proposed. Mm-hmm. And I think we need that moving forward, because I think if we look at it from the more compassionate society, then we need to think about rehabilitation, because sometimes people get involved into crime, it's due to circumstances. It's not everyone is hardcore criminal. So I think it is very important philosophy and approach to be taken when we think about how do we deal with our prisoners, and it's a very important step.
When you talk to, when you tell people what it is that you do, what is their general feedback in your work as a lawyer, particularly in those pro bono cases, the people that you say society has forgotten?
So I think...
Okay. Are they compassionate? This part of the compassionate society that you say?
I deal with a lot of those people who are on death row, the families, and most of the time they will tell me the story about how they have to sell their house, they have to sell their land to pay for the legal fees, and yet the person, the son, is still in prison. And they also tell me the story how they have to buy food to the son when they're in prison, and it breaks the family. Because we always look at it from the perspective of the victims. Actually, those people who are the family whose children are on death row, they also suffer. And all the times, they're all poor people, where most of us in the society do not wish to look at. And I think by doing this, at least they have opportunity to still spend time with the family, albeit in a very limited time, and at some point, perhaps, hopefully, they will also be able to meet them again. I think it is a fantastic thing that is happening in our country. I think we are moving towards the right direction.
Ram, in the couple minutes that we have left, I want to ask you where what you would like to the people watching from now until next Monday, Tuesday, when the bill is debated and hopefully passed. How do you address all the skeptics, all the people who have concerns, who say that the 800 people are currently on death row will increase overcrowding because they're going to be staying in prison for longer? How do you address all of those concerns about justice and deterrent? And in the couple of minutes that we have left, can you sum it up?
It's a very short time, but these cases, like I said right from the beginning, they're going to go back to the courts. The courts will decide. Not all of them might be given an imprisonment sentence. That's number one. Secondly, when we talk about how are we, when you remove the death sentence, are we going to see an increase in prison congestion? Perhaps not, because quite a few of them have served quite a significant length of time in prison already. So if their death sentences are commuted to imprisonment, they will eventually be released, maybe not too long from now, because depending on how long they've served already. So it can contribute to perhaps even a decrease in prison inmates now. So I would, like I said right from the beginning, we are committed, the government is committed to ensure that all parties are heard, all parties, that we take their views seriously, and the abolition of the death penalty, or the mandatory death penalty, must be made very clear. Is the mandatory part only. The death penalty still remains, particularly in crimes, violent crimes.
Thank you both for being on the show. Oh, Rashid,
All right. In 1983, Ram's father was the lawyer that challenged the constitutionality of the death sentence in the case of Lau Kee Hoo. And it's ironic that he is now the person partly responsible towards the removal of the mandatory death sentence. I just want to add that.
Oh, you should have highlighted that, Ram.
I didn't know that myself. I knew that, but not the exact year.
There you go. It's come full circle. Thank you so much for being on the show, both of you.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Ram Kapal Singh, Deputy Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of Law and Institutional Reform, and lawyer Abdul Rashid Ismail, past president of Hakam. Wrapping up this episode of Consider This, I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.